Big show for you here today. Nate Tice joins me for another edition of the Fantasy Film Room. We got a little breaking news before the show. Anthony Richardson is back as the Colts starting quarterback for the rest of the season. We react to that news along with some other injured players that are returning that could have major fantasy impact to their offenses and obviously their own individual play. Christian McCaffrey, Isaiah Pacheco, Mike Evans, Nico Collins, and many more players were discussed along the way. Plus a Thursday night preview of a game that's a little bit tricky to figure out. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, November 14th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Nate Tice. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. I feel like I just saw you. But I'm doing great. Some interesting news. Again, we're timing up these pods for the news to drop before we start them, which is always nice. But doing great. Feeling very week 11. I don't know how to describe it. Maybe it was just because it was 11-11. But yeah, just feeling very week 11. And I mean that in a good way. That's how I'm doing today.
Yeah, no, I feel week 11 is, and I think I've said this a couple times this week, you start to feel like, all right, I really know these teams. I really know where certain teams are going. You know, we did Football 301 yesterday, and we talked about which teams can actually win the Super Bowl versus, like, let's all pick our bottom three teams, like the teams will pick top three in the NFL draft. We all agreed on that. So it feels very much like, yes, things are settling. We know where things are, which obviously means over the next few weeks, those are going to get blown to smithereens, and then we'll be in a completely new universe. But you are right. The NFL did provide us with something to talk about. We're going to do all of our usual Fantasy Film Room things here. We have a big trending topic to discuss. Nate has a bunch of things he's nerding out about, so we're going to try to hit all of it, but we can't not open the pod with the breaking news today that Shane Steichen, you guys have been hearing about old Shane a lot lately. Shane Steichen, Indianapolis Colts head coach, announced today that Anthony Richardson will start at quarterback for the Colts for the rest of the season. Before I throw this to Nate to get his thoughts, and I know a lot of his thoughts, and we don't have to spend a ton of time on this because it is, I mean, the Richardson stuff has been discussed to death, but I just think it's worth going over the timeline of the last month. The last month here, because I noted this today when the news was announced that Anthony Richardson's going to start for the rest of the season, and just how back and forth this has all been. The messaging is great. There's a lot of clarity in Indianapolis. Of course, at Coach Speak Index, which is a great account on Twitter, obviously had the full timeline on it. So this is Colts head coach Anthony Richardson on the QB1 role over the past 3 weeks. October 14th, when Anthony's healthy, he's our quarterback. October 28th. Right now, today, Anthony is the starting quarterback. October 30th, Joe Flacco is, quote, our quarterback going forward. November 3rd, right now, yes, on whether Joe Flacco is still the starting quarterback going forward. Today, November 13th, after he was announced a couple of days ago as the starter against the Jets in week 11, Anthony Richardson will start at quarterback for the Colts for the rest of the season. So, yeah, again, total clarity. Nothing weird going on there in Indianapolis. Nate Tice, what was your reaction to this news this morning?
Oh, man, just put me out of my misery. That's how I feel with this. It feels to me, also announcing this on a Wednesday morning, which, knowing timelines for football teams and how they have to practice and prep for everything. So you come in, you have your Sunday game, which was a debacle of how that game ended up for the Colts. So then you come in Monday morning, you review those games, you review it as a staff, and then some of the players come in. Tuesday, you might have a walkthrough and a review, or you might do it the other way around, Monday and Tuesday in some combination. Usually reviewing that tape and already preparing for the next week. That's when you make the change, maybe announce it, maybe the beginning of the week. And then so to me, the timing of this, yes, I know they talked to the public maybe for the first time on a Wednesday morning, but after saying that 2 days ago on a Monday, that meant something changed in 2 days that we're going back. What changed? Did you review the film? And then you're like, oh, it wasn't that bad. Then reviewed it again. You're like, actually, we have to make the change. Is something up top? Would Jim Irsay change? Like, what changed? What they're going against the Jets defense who have given up. I can kind of easily say that, watching that Cardinals game. Oh my God, the tackling in that game was atrocious. maybe.
Well, did you see Jeff Ulbrich, the interim head coach, former defensive coordinator, say today that the Jets are going to focus on returning to the fundamentals of tackling? So maybe the Colts saw that and were like, all right, they're going to return to the fundamentals of tackling. Let's bring our very hard to tackle quarterback back in the mix.
At least
here.
The Jets aren't all in this year.
No, I
have to get back to tackling drills and emphasis on tackling. That was supposed to be the strength of their team too. It's like, no. I know they take a drop off and everything, but man, like, watch Sauce Gardner's effort right now. He's second half, he's like, I'm out of here. Like, this sucks. I'm not tackling James Conner. But anyways, back to the Colts and this debacle. Maybe a breath of fresh air keeping them from Brian Flores was a decent thing, but like, again, the messaging hasn't matched. And I know coaches are always gonna, you know, beat around the bush on some of the things that they message, but you got to be intentional with your messaging. And when you come out like this, even if it's not your fault, you being Shane Steichen, and like, maybe you are like, this is out of your hands, maybe it's a GM or owner decision, all you still have to be the messenger, and you still have to find ways to kind of like mitigate that and make it just, you know, more tolerable, you know, some easier to swallow. And it just seems to me, it's just like that he's getting marching orders probably from Irsay, the owner, and then like he has to, you know, operate with those marching orders, and that is what's leading to this disjointedness. So again, don't want to like go like, oh, Steichen's the worst, or I still believe in Steichen. Mm-hmm. I still like a lot of the stuff he does, but this just kind of speaks to what this organization is. It always starts at the top, and that's why it probably feels this way. If you ever seen a picture of Jim Irsay, it makes a lot more sense. But I've had enough feelings about what Richardson is and is not doing. So listen to those pods, either Football 3-1 or this show.
Yeah.
about those. Right. But I think it's just a messy team right now, that they're operating like a messy team. Like, no one is hiding that they're operating like this right now.
Yeah. And look, I mean, I don't know how much you talk with your wife about football and like what's going on in the NFL. I don't know how much
I talk, she powers off.
Right, totally.
Yeah.
Similar. But like, very few things. My wife will watch games with me every now and again and stuff like that, but in terms of like what's going on in the league, very few things rise to the level of like, I gotta tell you about what's going on here.
Right,
I gotta unload this to you.
Yeah.
You know, usually like 90% of it is Aaron Rodgers related. But to come back to the Jets, but it's not a good look. The only reason I'm bringing this up is it's not a good look that this has happened to the Colts twice in the span of 2 years. Because I just look back at it, we're 2 years out from November 7th, 2022, when the Colts hired interim head coach Jeff Saturday, who I saw on TV at the gym this morning on ESPN, still doing that gig. So, I mean, it's just, the Colts are wild. It's so dysfunctional. It's just you nailed it perfectly, that I've said about this multiple things, which is, one, if they want to bench Richardson and give him a breather and all that stuff, I think that's totally defensible. I think Bryce Young has come out on the other side of his little breather, looking
looks nice. Yeah,
Who knows what Bryce Young will be? It's like, I don't know that that's going to change the destiny of Bryce Young's career.
Right.
I don't know that this is going to change the destiny of Anthony Richardson's career. But what I do know is that Bryce is coming out the last couple of games and playing a lot looser, playing a lot more aggressive. So, you know, if you just can take that mental break for a minute and then get back out there, and really all it is you want to stop it from spiraling, that's great. Totally defensible decision. The problem is, like you said, the messaging hasn't been like that. It's been, oh, Flacco gives us the best chance to win. Flacco's going to be the quarterback for the rest of the season. And as I always said when we got those headlines, is we'll see. We'll see how long that was. And it was 2 weeks. It was 2 weeks. In terms of from a bottom line fantasy perspective, you kind of know what the deal is with this. The thing is, like, yeah, were the receivers maybe coming alive a little bit more from a production standpoint with Flacco? Sort of. I mean, you're looking at like, great, 6 for 71 for A.D. Mitchell, like, you know, 7 for 72 for Josh Downs. It would have looked better if he had caught that potential touchdown pass. Like, you know, that would have been great. But at the same time, like, it wasn't as if this offense suddenly was just alive. It was buoyant with Joe Flacco. So, yeah, let's just see what Richardson is. And we can analyze the fallout of this like in pods next week about, all right, well, maybe just all these guys go back in the tank or something like that. But given what we got from Flacco, I am a little skeptical that everything just comes out of this offense.
Yeah, I mean, putting Richardson back there at least will help the run game. you got that. And like, maybe, and it's funny is that they even mentioned that a couple of times the last couple of weeks. Like, well, you know, we've lost an element in the run game. It's like, what was that element? What element did you guys lose? Oh, okay. Like, yeah, that was supposed to be a fastball. I always use that term, but a strength of this offense was the not even just the QB run game, but the threat of the QB run game with Richardson. And again, some of the stuff that was frustrating was that he would have, he being Anthony Richardson, would have the kind of operation errors, I would call them, you know, hand the ball off and fumbling. And he did that a couple of weeks, dropping a snap on a handoff, you know, just tiny minor things. And maybe this is a way to calm that down and boost that, I guess. But again, I've gone back to the original assessment of this when they were starting to struggle a little bit, the Colts, and we kind of just faded out. This team, I wish they had an earlier bye week. Like, yeah, no totally. Team needed that earlier bye week than them. And they, of course, have a late, late bye week. And that's what maybe they gave Richardson a 2-week bye week. I wish, but again, the messaging hasn't kind of added up to that. If they said, we're giving Richardson a breather for a couple of weeks, and then we're going to assess it and see where he is at that point in time. Man, we just have a late bye week. If they said stuff like that, I'd be like, wow, okay, I get what they're doing here. Okay, I wouldn't agree all the way with it, but I get what they're doing. But again, it just seems so emotional. And especially in dealing with a spot that shouldn't, emotion is going to be a part of sports, but dealing with what should be a long-term plan shouldn't go by day-to-day emotion. It should be stick to the plan. Yes, stuff's going to happen. So stuff's going to change, but the overall plan should have been solidified way early. Like, I mean, after he was drafted and not day-to-day, week-to-week. And, you know, again, maybe an owner that likes to hire his old players off of TV to be the head coach has some aspects, and maybe he's listening to them going like, I would have never tapped out. You know, that might be a part of this as well. So again, NFL, it's never boring. And the Colts apparently are never boring. I just wish they were a little bit more exciting, and I wish their defense was better so I can make it a little bit more interesting to talk about.
Yeah, honestly, I'd love for them to be a little bit more boring. That would be great. Like, just be boring for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And so that we're not at the position where at the end of the season, like, ah, man, do we need to blow everything up and start all over again? Because this team just needs to just shut the hell up and be boring for the next 7 weeks here. Right. And okay, now we're at the end of the season. Let's see what 2025 looks like for all these guys, as hopefully they're growing together. And I do think, I really hope, you know, I'm a big Michael Pittman fan. I really hope they put him on IR, like, because enough already with this. Like, it's great. It's a back, man. Like, he needs to take some time away. And like, let's have Mitchell and Richardson try to figure each other out a little bit. Let's have Downs and Richardson. Cause that's another thing. Like, people hyperanalyze the Josh Downs, Anthony Richardson splits. But if you really look at it, like, they don't have a lot of time, like, healthy together on the field.
No.
I mean, obviously Richardson doesn't have a ton of time healthy on the field, period. But then even like, if you just look at Josh Downs this year, like week three, it was his first game and he's coming back from the high ankle sprain. Wasn't even really fully used.
Yeah.
Week four is he gets kind of more of a full load of snaps, and then Richardson gets hurt in that game against the Steelers. Then it's Flacco. Then week seven, like, okay, Richardson's back in there, and that's the, you know, 3 targets, 3-yard performance. So it's and then the next game, he has his best fantasy game of the season. I know, like, I joked on Twitter this morning, do not give me any context about it. Like, I'm not looking for yeah buts and context. But he had 4 catches for 109 yards and a touchdown. And like, people call that one touchdown, oh, it was a broken play. He won the shit out of that route. And then the two Texans guys ran into each other. So it's not a blown coverage or anything fluky. And then, of course, then we got the next 2 games with Flacco, which are 6 for 60, 7 for 72. So this is the problem with football always, but it's certainly the problem with Indianapolis. It's like, nobody's on the, like, we're dealing with so many small sample sizes and already small sample size environment. So I'm with Nate. Let's just see this thing play out. And then again, Try to be boring for a little bit, Colts, and try to get everybody on the same.
They're projected to win 8.5 games. Act like it. Act like an 8 or 9 win team, not some crazy, you know, stop acting like the Eagles or something, like, where it's just like every, or the Jets, where every week is just chaos. Like, please stop with this. Be boring.
All right. Well, this does transition us kind of sort of well into our trending topic for the fantasy film room today. For new folks, this is what we do here. We take a bigger picture trending fantasy topic that we want to try to get ahead of the curve on. We want to focus on, you know, storylines and things like that, but also then in the back half of the show, Nate gives the things he's nerding out about. He's got 3 pretty fun ones, so I do want to try to get to all 3 today. And then we finish up with a Thursday night preview. And like I said, our trending topic for today was going to be injured players returning that could have major fantasy ripple effects. And I mean, Richardson is not injured, Maybe his pride is a little hurt, but I mean, he's coming back and he's definitely going to have a major fantasy ripple effect. So let's transition to the five other guys I want to talk about here. And some of these are going to be a little more simple than others. I want to talk Christian McCaffrey, Isaiah Pacheco, Nico Collins, Mike Evans. And I'm cheating on the last one by saying Jordan Love because he was playing before the bye, but I'm hoping that he's a little healthier coming out of the bye. But let's start with Christian McCaffrey. Nate Tice, I will say, just to throw it to you, I was surprised that it wasn't any sort of like, let's ease Christian back into this. It was one carry for Jordan Mason, one carry for for Garendo, and then like all the rest of it was McCaffrey. So we've got one game under our belt with CMC back. What do we think?
Oh, man. Well, we made the joke. I mean, 49ers stands for his 40 time now, like with CMC right now, 4-9. Yeah, it was not easing back, and I know you have to take the rust off, but it was a featured role, and it kind of surprised me too, especially with how McCaffrey is moving. He is definitely not 100%. That's easy to say, and maybe not 90%. I would say it's 80% Christian McCaffrey right now, but I will say the receiving element is going to be the big part of it, and just you have to honor him. Like, even if defenses go, oh, he's lost some stuff, maybe lost some explosiveness, you still have to honor him as a receiver because that is the element that he's going to pop open in this game or in this offense. And the role they've been desperately missing is being able to invert his stuff with Debo and do all the other fun stuff Shanahan wants to do. So he's not 100%. He's not going to be explosive as he was, but he's going to be better than what they had, even if it's not all the way there. Jordan Mason is a singles and doubles hitter. I think McCaffrey can do that even at 80%, but he can bring that receiving element. So, yeah, it's still going to be a productive back in still an offense that's still cooking if you look at the metrics. But more of that's been pass game stuff, which I think McCaffrey's going to be a beneficiary of.
Yeah, in a weird way, I guess I never really thought about this as I was thinking about the 49ers with Jordan Mason in the beginning part of the year, because you see Jordan Mason out there, I'm like, yeah, he's a good back, man. He's clearly, and that's where it's kind of weird that, all right, why don't we try to, and I know he's dealing with some injuries right now, maybe he's not 100%. So, but even Garendo, like, I don't know that Garendo is a great back, but he's at least given him some pop in a couple of big moments here. Like, let's just let one of these other dudes take the grinder carries.
Right.
At the same time, though, this hasn't really felt like an offense that wants to do any grinding in a weird way. They've been almost like completely eschewing any of the old Shanahan stuff, and they've been a very, you know, drop back pass, like spread things out, which, hey, McCaffrey fits that. Like, right. Yeah. Maybe they don't have that same pitch from an under center run game or any of that stuff, which, I mean, McCaffrey can do anything, but we know he is a singular one of one talent from what he can do in the passing game, like a true transformative player. And obviously, again, you mentioned he was used that way, ran a route on 80.5% of the dropbacks, was targeted on 21.2% of those routes in week 10. And I think we're going to probably continue to see that because of what the mismatches that he brings opens up so much for these other receivers. So in a weird way, maybe it felt like Jordan Mason is a classic eat your vegetables type of runner. And this has felt like, right or wrong, and, you know, maybe we can disagree with the 49ers approach on this, but this felt like a team that doesn't really want to eat their vegetables at any point this season, even when McCaffrey wasn't in there.
They are hunting the fireworks factory. Like, they are just gunning for that, it seems like. And that, I mean, it feels like it's just become a chunk play passing offense, and they've just kind of done away with and the run game is just more of a, like, yeah, let's do this to get a couple yards just to keep us on track. Yeah. No, as opposed to a weaponized element of the offense, which, again, it makes sense. When you lose Christian McCaffrey, it's going to turn into that. But it truly, like, I think what you're getting at is right. Like, they said, well, this is hard. Who wants some more sugar? Like, who wants another 20-yard gain? Who wants another 24-yard gain? Who wants another catch and run? Even the catch and run stuff's even dropped off, too. Oh, that's another thing that McCaffrey's going to bring back, is screen game. The 49ers screen game has taken a big hit this year. And that's because you lose a guy that's really good on them in Christian McCaffrey, and his feel and find where the spots are. Also, again, the formation versatility that he provides. So that's another thing, some of those catch and run opportunities. So that will ease some of Brock Purdy's load. But yeah, it's really become a big chunk play offense. A lot of Kittle, Getting out there, a lot of Juwan Jennings. I'll just spoil it right now. A lot of Juwan Jennings out there. He's one of the things I'm nerding out about because he's just freaking awesome. But yeah, but I think that in a weird, like you said, it's like the passing game, I feel like benefits even more. The red zone benefits even more. In the run game, I think it's still going to be kind of more singles and doubles just because of the limitations.
Yeah. And look, I mean, if they wanted to just go full pass heavy against the Bucks in week 10 and kind of forget the run game, I think that's fair also. Like, I think that's a good way to win that game if you want to just go drop back heavy against the Bucks. So maybe we'll see a different approach in week 11 against the Seattle Seahawks, the Packers in week 12. Because in terms of like expected fantasy points from fantasy points data, McCaffrey's at like 16.3, which is obviously was 13th among backs that week. You know, we're typically used to seeing McCaffrey much higher than that. And I think we will. Like, I'd be surprised if they go that they like forget the run game that much because I think McCaffrey is, you know, if he's not back all the way to number one running back rest of season, I think he's back up to like a tier one guy, you know, in the same vein of maybe I'm over aggressive and just putting him back up there, but I think he's in that group with like Barkley and Henry and Bijan the rest of the way.
I think he's gonna be like that tier, the bottom end of tier one, like, because we just got to remember it's a Shanahan offense. Like, this is the formula. Like, they're gonna stick to the run game. He's gonna get his touches, even if they're not as dynamic as they were before. He's gonna get the usage, and it's still Christian McCaffrey. He's gonna get touchdowns. Like, that's another thing, is just the designer plays in the inside the 5 yard line, not just runs but passes too. Like, he's gonna get those. So I'm with you. That's, even if he's not one. He's still a running back type, running back one, just because all the stuff he's going to bring and that offense.
All right. We go from the team that lost last year's Super Bowl to the team that won last year's Super Bowl, but staying at the running back position. Isaiah Pacheco had his 21-day window activated, and sounds like he could be back maybe, you know, within the next few weeks. Nate, anytime I will just say this, anytime I watched Kareem Hunt this year, I was just like, man, Isaiah Pacheco should be having a big time season, because the Chiefs ranked second in rushing success rate this year. Like, they have been a good, efficient run game. It's 2024 version of Kareem Hunt, for God's sakes. Like, I mean, he is getting the yards that are blocked for him, and for the most part, maybe like a half yard, always falling forward, no real negative runs or going backwards or anything, but not getting a lot more than that. Pacheco, I'm curious about your stance on him as a player. I've always really appreciated his game. I think he brings like a certain, this is such hokey stuff, but I think he brings a certain dimension to this Chiefs offense that they lack otherwise, you know, from a toughness, physicality standpoint. But yeah, I will say this, I'm very excited about Pacheco getting back in the mix here for Kansas City.
Yeah, this offense is truly four or 5 yards in a cloud of dust, or 4 and 5 yards in a Mahomes, like, just getting 6 yards to Travis Kelce or DeAndre Hopkins right after. And it's by design. It's a very nickel and dime offense. Like you said, the run game is one of the best in the NFL without using a QB. Very traditional. It's just hyper efficient. They get to a lot of third and manageables. And then Mahomes, just as Mahomes, gets over there. It's the first down, and the cosmic ballet goes on. What Pacheco does, Pacheco's vision has always been a little to me, and a little like, you know, his tempoing of runs a little but he runs freaking hard, and he is more explosive than anybody else that's in that backfield right now. With old Kareem Hunt, Carson Steele, who still is masquerading as a fullback. And this isn't just like kind of eye test stuff. This is some, you know, just actually numbers too, and I was just looking it up. But like, even if just stats like, runs where he reaches 15 miles an hour or more. Last year, Pacheco had 14.1% of his runs. He reached that. This year, I think the leader for the Chiefs is at 6%. So almost no more than double of those types of runs.
Feels like it.
And explosive runs. He had 20 last year. The Chiefs, up until a few weeks ago, only had one going in throughout the entire year.
Wow.
So he had 20 explosive runs, which were gains of 10 yards or more last year, which wasn't a Chiefs run game last year that was bad. Like, it was bottom 6-7 last year. Now it's top 5. Totally different runs, but he had 9.8% of his runs went for 10 yards or more last year. This year, I think Kareem Hunt leads their team with 4 explosive runs. It might be 3, but it's just another drop off that they've had this year. So that's what he's going to bring, where I'm not saying, oh, he's taking it to the house, full on Chris Johnson in his prime, but he's going to at least get it. It's all been singles. It's all been singles getting on base, singles getting on base. All right, somebody's going to get us extra bases. All right, here we go. Kareem Hunt is leading the Chiefs right now with 5 explosive runs, 4% rate. So Pacheco last year in a bad Chiefs ecosystem for the run game was more than doubling that rate. I mean, almost tripling that rate as far as just explosive runs. So like that is the element that's going to bring. It's just those doubles that he's going to be able to get to the field, those 15 yarders, those 8 yarders instead of just 5. And honestly, just having Hunt in there too is going to be good too, because it's just take a couple breaths. He can ease back into it. He doesn't have to always have the load. If he gets the hot hand like he did in the Eagles against the Super Bowl, you ride him, you know, but he's going to at least bring some more explosive elements, even though he is not. He tested really well, but he doesn't always run that speed because he runs so he runs so stompy. But I think that that is what he's going to bring more than anything. And honestly, it's going to be beneficial for this whole team. I mean, shoot, this run game is cooking. I mean, they have figured out that their interior three is just so good. Why not lean into it? So this is just another explosive play element for a team that needs that more dropped in, and they're figuring out how they do that.
Those guys on the interior are playing a lot better, like consistently this year than they did during last regular season. I remember talking about this with you at the Super Bowl, that they weren't always running the ball consistently during the year, but going into the playoffs and like late season last year, they talk about eating your vegetables. This kind of happens all the time with Kansas City, where they're like, all right, well, it's the end of the season. It's time to win some games. We're going to lean into this run game a little bit more. We're going to lean into the combo of Tooney and Smith and Creed Humphrey. We're going to lean into these guys. They've now, I think, because they kind of have to, they all their pass catchers are hurt besides the rookie first round pick .. like all their main pass catchers are hurt. We gotta eat our vegetables here. We're signing Juju Smith-Schuster. We need to lean into the run game. Oh shoot, our starting running back is hurt. Well, Kareem Hunt's gonna get the yards that are there. So I'm really excited about Pacheco. He's rostered right now in 92% of Yahoo leagues. I would guess that that 8% out there, people in those leagues are probably not listening to this podcast. So I'm not gonna waste you guys' time with go check your waiver wires for Isaiah Pacheco. But I bet that he's somebody that, like, if you want to throw some trade packages out there, he's right before the trade deadline ends, he might be a guy that you can get in sort of a deal. And like, once I would guarantee you that we see one game of Pacheco, whenever that is, whichever week it is, his first game back, he's going to launch probably right back up to like top 12, top 10 running back rest of season. That's pretty much how strongly I feel about this run game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think just it's the simple math of good blocking happening right now. More talent should be good. Even if I don't view him as a top end running back, it's like just the ecosystem for it is just so good. And he's going to get usage too. Like they're committed to this. This is their style of attack this year. I think Pacheco being back in it, it's going to be very beneficial.
All right. Let's talk about another player who his team needs him. Like, it would be nice if Pacheco could come back for the Chiefs. That'd be grand. This team needs this player back. Nico Collins, Houston Texans wide receiver. It was announced on Monday that he's going to practice, and he's going to practice all week, and he's going to play Monday night against the Cowboys. Nice little return spot against that waving the white flag Dallas Cowboys defense. I mean, I think that they've been waving the white flag since, like, I don't know, week two. We definitely might be close to quitting time for the Dallas Cowboys defense. That's who Nico Collins of the Houston Texans will face here in week 11 on Monday night. You know how I feel about Nico Collins, Nate. I think I know how you feel about Nico Collins, but just there's a lot wrong in the Houston Texans offense. There are other issues beyond the receiver core, but what can getting a player like Nico back fix for this team?
Oh my God, everything. no more of requiring, no offense to the guy, but Tank Dell or John Mechie to beat man coverage. No more of those guys also getting yak catches. Or yak opportunities after the inbreakers that they run, that this offense loves to run them. I think even last year, or last week, I should say, the Sunday night game against the Lions, right before the half, CJ Stroud makes a fantastic throw to Mechie over the middle, beats two linebackers over the middle. Mechie gets a couple yards after the catch and tackle done. Nico might house that. Nico might get 20 yards after he takes that. That is what someone doing something with the ball. That's what Nico can do. Even if we don't picture him, we picture him as a big X guy. He's so explosive with the ball in his hands that, like, he can just get vertical in a hurry. So that is what he's going to bring to the table. Just that, the those intermediate and deep areas are back for this offense that, I mean, they desperately need it, especially since their run game is just so poor that they need chunks. And Nico gives them opportunities that it's going to be volatile. Like, that's what this Texans offense is going to be. Like, it's going to be a volatile offense. They're going to have some frustrating drives, but then they're going to have drives where they just throw haymakers at you. That's what Nico Collins brings. He's just another guy to throw haymakers with, and a guy that anybody would be happy to have. But I'm sure Stroud in this offense, it's going to just be, I mean, just fireworks. I'm excited to see Collins back. I hope he's actually at 100%. And not rushing back. I know he's taking his time with it, but, like, just, you know, those soft tissue injuries, because especially with someone that requires some explosive playability. But I'm excited to see him back in there because it will make Stroud's life that much easier, especially what he's been going through the last few weeks.
Yeah, I actually think it's pretty similar to, ironically, the team that Dallas faced last week in Philadelphia, because I think this is the tier of player that Nico Collins is. Like, it's like the Eagles without A.J. Brown, you know? I mean, he's just like a fixer. I don't think the Eagles do anything all that special. We've talked about this a lot, but, like, they don't do anything all that special from a schematic standpoint. Maybe a little tiny bit under Kellen Moore this year as opposed to last year. But for the most part, it's just like, all right, we've got single coverage. Like, cool, we're going to A.J. Brown. Even to the point that, I mean, I think I do think the Cowboys pass rush is going to be better. Obviously, with Micah Parsons back there, they're going to be better, of course. And I think they gave Hurts some trouble. I think they will give C.J. Stroud some trouble because this Texans offensive line has been a problem. And teams that can put heat on Stroud, you know, he's had to go into creation mode. And I don't think he's had anybody to create with. That's the thing. He's going to have somebody here to create with. Right. And I think that was what we saw. Like, all right, yeah, the Cowboys pass rush rattled Jalen Hurts, but A.J. Brown's down there, 122 air yards in a game that they barely had to try to beat the Cowboys on the other side offensively. And that's, I think, the type of game we could be looking at here with Nico Collins. Like, he's a guy that I've had in my rest of season top six wide receivers for like 2 weeks now, because I just know that the moment he gets back out there, as long as he's healthy, like you said, he's going to get ramped all the way back up, because now there's no Diggs here either. And he was their other man coverage player. I mean, Tank Dell can beat man coverage, but he's more devastating, like, down the field against zone coverages on these outbreaking routes. And Stroud has such a great ball placement to get him those passes. You kind of need to have a great ball placement when you're this type of wide receiver and you're a smaller dude. So they work really well together, but it's just tough when that's your primary wideout, especially when, and I'm not even really dissing Tank Dell here, because the real issue is just that I know Mechie had a decent statistical game, but they just don't have, like, another guy who can consistently win, who can consistently be where he needs to be. And that's obviously one of the strengths of Nico Collins's game.
I have, like, a great example, and I wish I could just show all 22 right now, but it was of why having a guy of Nico Collins caliber or just a real receiver makes a huge difference, especially in Baltimore or high variance moments. It was a third down in the red zone against the Lions. Stroud ended up kind of taking a sack, or like a 0 yard gain sack, where he started trying to create and got tackled at the line of scrimmage. It just kind of looked ugly. Like, he wasn't sure where to throw and everything on that play. And this is kind of like a nice snapshot what the Texans are right now, about, like, scheme wise too. Texans like to, especially in the red zone, go empty, and then they'll have their tight end and running back on either side of the tackles. So it's empty, quote unquote, but it's like a double wing formation, and they'll chip help and then release into the flats. You kind of know what you're getting when teams do that. Teams have come up with some changeups on those formations, but also defenses know what you're doing. The Lions rush three, but they blitz a DB off the edge. So they're rushing two defensive linemen, one DB, and they're dropping eight in the coverage. What that did was it made Dalton Schultz stay in protection. He's the tight end. Rather than just chip out, now he has one-on-one with that DB, because that's technically his assignment, his protection assignment. So now you have four routes going against eight in coverage in the red zone. Not good math for the offense. This is and especially in the red zone. So it's so tight. There's so many bodies. Just picture a 2-3 zone in basketball, just arms everywhere. On the play, the Texans, because it's mirrored, have two corner routes by Tank Dell and Xavier Hutchinson. Stroud's going to go to Tank Dell. I have one-on-ones on the outside. That's my number one guy. I'm going to him over Xavier Hutchinson. You have Nico Collins instead of Xavier Hutchinson, he's taking that. And defenses can't do what they just did, where they singled up one receiver, doubled the other two, dropped eight into coverage. That's a math changer. Defenses now have to go, I need two eyeballs over there. That now opens up other opportunities for other guys. But even just saying it makes Stroud's number one easier, because that's 100% where he would have gone with the ball. But I understood why he didn't. I'm not going to take Xavier Hutchinson against press on a huge third down in the red zone. You know, no offense to the guy, but I know who my bread is buttered. I'm taking Tank Dell one-on-one. Tank Dell technically wasn't one-on-one because extra eyeballs got out there because the defense knew that he's the primary threat. So it's just all these trickle-down effects that having a good player does. A good pass rusher is the same way. Like, good offensive linemen are the same way. These are the booster effects that these guys bring and just making the quarterback's life easier. But that little play was just like a great example. It's like, why don't you just take, well, it's Hutchinson. I get why you didn't look over there. Like, I totally understand why you didn't look, because I wouldn't either. I would bet my guy Tank Dell to win. So again, but if that's Nico Collins running it, boom, that's a new answer that they can have. Defenses can't get to these exotic answers and really just kneecap your whole offense. So just want to kind of bring that little snapshot and also take digs at the Texans scheme.
Not yet. Well, that was a not so subtle.
I'm not the only one, but
not so subtle bit of shade from you there. But yeah, no, if you look at the data last year, Nico Collins smoked like single high coverage because of exactly what you just said there, that if they have that single high safety, like, his eyes are going to be on that side of the field. And then if you don't, then you know what's going to happen. Nico's going to absolutely smoke you. But then that leaves opportunities for Tank Dell on the other side there. Like, I think Tank Dell is a great, great, great number two wide receiver. And I think Nico is like an elite number one. So yeah, CJ Stroud's life is going to be a lot easier when you get that there. So I think even is this offense ever going to be what, like, I hoped it was, where I think I had them third in our top 10 offenses ranking.
I mean, I was like sixth or seventh. I was up there.
Like,
too.
I think they're going to underperform that, but they could maybe be like 10th, 11th. If they get Nico back there, and that's going to help a lot.
In the division they're in, it's all about how they play at the end of the season, because they're in the playoffs. Well, you know what I mean? Yeah. So now it's about making the best version for the playoffs, which is shoring up the whole line. They're already making swaps there, and now hopefully getting Nico healthy. And like, that's what you're building for. Teams like the Chiefs can do this because they know what they're doing. But like, when you're Texans, kind of in this new world, like, that's really the goal now. Is, yeah, you're going to maybe lose some games here, but really it's making the best version for January. And this, having a top five, top six receiver in the game, yeah, that helps to get your best version. So figuring that out is going to be great.
Yeah, that's going to be good stuff for them. Let's talk about another big X receiver. Let's stay in Nate Tice zone here. Let's talk about Mike Evans. The Bucs are on bye this week, so obviously we don't have to talk about, you know, their upcoming matchup or anything like that, but pretty good chance, I would say, right now that Mike Evans is going to return to this team coming out of the bye week. Man, do they need him. I mean, man, do they need him back here? Because I've, you know, Liam Cohen's my dude now, apparently.
He's your dude.
I find a way to talk about him on like every single show. He's a good play caller.
He's doing great. I'm with you on it. No, I know it's quote unquote your bit, but I'm like championing it. I'm your Flavor Flav with it. Like, go Matt.
Yeah. I'll take it.
Because I'm totally with it.
Well, but if you did, like I said, it's been inspired stuff that he's done during this stretch without these top two wide receivers. Chris Godwin, obviously, unfortunately, not coming back this year, but Mike Evans could come back. During this inspired stretch, let me just read you out the catch totals for players. Let's not even do catches. Let's just do targets here.
Okay.
Kate Otten, 21. Oh, no, excuse me, 29. I undershot it. 29 targets in the last 3 weeks without these two wide receivers.
3 weeks? That's hilarious.
Yeah. Kate Otten, almost 10 targets per game. So 29 targets for Kate Otten. 6 red zone targets, by the way, obviously team lead. 16 targets for Rashad White, 13 targets for Sterling Shepard, 13 targets for Bucky Irving, 11 targets for Ryan Miller. I'll wait for your scouting report on Ryan Miller.
I got none.
That's it. That's who's got double digit targets over the last 3 games. Buck, in terms of catches, it is Kate Otten 22, Rashad White 14, Bucky Irving 13. Your top 3 most like caught passes on this team over the last 3 weeks are tight end, running back. That ain't a way to live. All right. That's not a way to be a dangerous offense. We can be a functional offense, but not a dangerous offense. We're about to drop Mike Evans back in here. Nate, What might that do for the Buccaneers offense?
I think it might make it more explosive. I think it might be a good thing for this Bucs offense and a good thing for the quarterback who really likes throwing it up to that big, tall X receiver and giving him chances at the ball. So I think it's going to be a good thing. I mean, you've nailed this the last couple of weeks about how Cade Otton is kind of, it's not a total one for one, but as kind of you getting a lot of the Godwin touches and the Godwin reps, and they've still been, you know, successful and still been pretty solid with them. Maybe some more receiver screens and everything like that. Okay, so we can kind of patchwork and money ball the Godwin role, I guess, with a couple other guys. But Mike Evans in a true X, as we just talked about with Nico Collins, it's really hard to replace that. So, and especially in this offense where everybody else kind of works in conjunction, and then the X is kind of truly isolated and is doing kind of his own thing, especially being vertical and everything. Yeah, it's just going to open up everything. Tristan Wirfs hurt now, but the offensive line has played better. The run game's been more cohesive. But really, it's just that, yeah, getting Mike Evans back in there is going to help everything out. So hopefully he is near. I mean, shoot, if they win that game, you start looking at those standings, you're starting to go, okay, you know, Bucks kind of maybe, you know, work their way back into this, but Evans is going to help. It's just, again, just like it's the continuation of the Nico Collins discussion. It's just going to make everybody's lives easier.
Yeah. Rakeem Jarrett has mostly been their X receiver. And let me just say this. I did not see that as Rakeem Jarrett's ideal role coming into the NFL, much less did I really see him as like a big time player in the NFL. So that's just where they're at. That's not where they need to be. So I'm certainly interested in Mike Evans. Again, he's another guy that the first game we get of him, like he's running all the routes, he's getting targets like usual. He would probably vault up to like wide receiver one rankings rest of the season. And it could definitely help out Baker Mayfield for sure, who's managed to keep it kind of sorted together from a fantasy perspective. Obviously, this last week, not really withstanding. But yeah, even, and by the way, just on Cade Otton, because I think people might ask, like, oh, is he a guy to sell high? But I think Nate nailed the point there, which is that he can do some of the Godwin stuff. So this Evans thing is a little singular. I think he might not be getting 10 targets a damn game when Mike Evans comes back.
No.
But I think I would still rather have whatever Cade Otton's going to give you over guys like, you know, I mean, the bevy of like Evan Ingram or Tucker Kraft or TJ Hawkins, like I think he's still in that group of players. So I wouldn't just be totally dismissing him rest of the season. But last one here we want to hit on, and you know, this doesn't have to be super in depth or anything because, again, I'm cheating with this one. But Jordan Love is coming off the bye. He was certainly banged up going into the bye. I don't know, Nate. I really think this offense has yet another gear to hit. Even if they've been very good this year, I just think a healthy Jordan Love with these receivers playing the way they are, I still think there is more good to get out of the Packers offense.
I do too. It's a kind of reminder that how young they are. Last year, they went through this exact, it felt like the same ebbs and flows of the season. Oh, some glimpses there. Ooh, some good Jordan Love play. Is this real? And then the second half of the year, they went gangbusters going into the playoffs. And I think kind of had some same feel this year, but a higher floor. You know, having Josh Jacobs as the back, the offensive line's been good and very cohesive. And just really, again, it's very sound attack. Like, that's why LaFleur is so good at what he does. But now this kind of feels like, okay, all right, Jordan, every time he kind of got going, he got hurt. The groin's tough for a quarterback too. Mm-hmm. Like just think of how you throw. Just have to, especially how Jordan Love throws, where everything looks like that Marge Simpson meme, you know, the swooping in meme. Like that. That's how he looks when he throws. So getting him healthy and getting him just confident in his body is, of course, going to be huge. He's a freaking quarterback, and I still think I think he's a star. I really do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's huge. I think this offense, though, again, like last year, and again, figuring out the personnel and figuring out this group of receivers, and now they get a bye and a deep breath to really reconfigure these things. This is where you can see a young team ascend. Young team with good coaches and what I think is a very good quarterback, at the very least a above board quarterback, even if you don't like Jordan Love. These are the teams that get shot out of a rocket in the second half of the year. This was my optimism about the Colts. I mean, it's the same argument. It's just that optimism about the Cardinals. This all carries over from team to team. These teams that have good coaching, or at least I thought with the Colts, but these teams that have good coaching and get a deep breath, especially at a perfect time like this, this is where you see them really ramp up their offense, really just trim fat and go like, okay, this works, this didn't work. This works, this didn't work. I bet you we see some really freaking awesome run game stuff in this game because they go, all right, what's some of the Malik Willis stuff that we really liked? And they have done a little bit of it, but now they go, okay, we got that package now. Okay, now we got this package with Love. Okay, now let's work on some new tweaks. What didn't you like, Jordan? Those little things. So, yeah, I'm very bullish on the Packers. I've been bullish on them the whole year, even with some of the woes they've had on both sides at times, or inconsistencies, I should say. I just think this is where they start ramping up, and they're catching a team that just fired their OC. So kind of decent timing there. They do have a gauntlet of a schedule, though. I mean, everyone in the NFC North kind of does. They're all just going to beat each other up. But, you know, and they got the 49ers. They got the Dolphins. Dolphins are really looking good right now. But still, I'm buying Packers stock right now.
Yeah, the Packers are 6.5-point road favorites going into Chicago this week, which is pretty nuts. So, but that's just a good encapsulation of where Chicago is at this point. And you think about, too, defensively, they're still pretty good pass defense, but their run defense has started to tick down a little bit. Has Chicago? Mm-hmm. I'm with you that I think we could see some really fun like run game stuff. Maybe you get Jaden Reed more involved in the run game too. A lot of the things they did with
more
Malik Willis
Reed
back
in general.
There. Yeah, more Jaden Reed in general, bro. I'm with you. Like, I get it.
We're so pro Jaden Reed. I just want to see more Jaden Reed. He's a freaking awesome player. He's so good.
I said yesterday he would be a 130 target player on any other team. Yep. And I get it. Like, I think you can't. There's nobody here that I'm like, you just got to get this guy off the field. It would be nice if Dontayvion Wicks could catch a football. That'd be awesome. he's the class of the money ball meme of like, this guy's this, that. The problem is he can't catch. I mean, again, three targets, two drops in the game before the bye. That's just,
I always
get it. You probably don't want to totally kill his confidence because he's also like he's a good separator. When he catches the ball, he does good things. The problem is just, gotta catch that thing when it comes to you. So even he's a guy that I wouldn't totally want to minimize, and he's the fourth receiver here in terms of routes run. Him and Christian Watson are kind of splitting reps, because I think the main three dudes should be Kraft, Dobbs, and Reed, but I think in terms of playing time, it is in that order, actually. And I'm not saying that Dobbs, you're not taking one of those guys off the field for Reed, but I just want to see Jaden Reed be like a 25% target share player. But I like what they've gotten out of Romeo Dobbs too, so I don't know.
They almost feel Sean Payton Saints-y with how they use their receivers. Mm. You are very good in this role. And that, like, Christian Watson's the vertical guy now. Like, he's the guy to stretch the field. Like, sometimes it looks great, and sometimes you're not going to hear anything from him. And it's like, okay, Dobbs, it's this type of game. So that's why it's always going to, like, change from game to game. But, I'm with you that Reed should always just, you know, he should get his 6 to 8 touches minimum every game. Like, he has the most consistent juice, I think, with all of them. But Dontayvion Wicks is funny, though, because it's like whenever he has a drop, or he has a lot of mental botches, I've noticed, too. And it's just like whenever he has those, I'm like, yeah, this is what he was in college, too. But you don't want to damn a guy, because guys get better. But it's also like those always the angel devil, like the devil for me just starts creeping up. Like, this is why you had a day 3 grade on him. Like, this is totally. Why. And it's like, yeah, no, but that's. We can beat it out. We can work it out of them. Like, but then like those keep cropping up. So I could see coaches going like, okay. And they get
ready. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They get Bo Melton involved all the time too. Like, he's their dirty work guy. Yeah. It's an interesting group. It's just hard for fantasy. Like, cause trying to figure that out. Just buy Jordan Love.
Yeah. That's the thing. I actually had that. That was my preseason analysis. I like all these pass catchers, but I think it's going to be tough week to week to figure it out. I'm just going to draft a lot of Jordan Love. So I'm personally looking for Jordan Love to coming back this week. So we'll see how it goes. Let's take our first break. We come back, we'll talk through the things that Nate is nerding out about right after this. All right, we're back. Nate, it's time to talk about the things you are nerding out about. You've got three for us this week. Let's try to hit all of them here. Let's get through it. Let's talk your first one, which is actually, I think I'm going to share at least two of the three I share the nerding out about. So this will be good.
Okay. Yeah. It was funny because like I felt like a couple hours before the show, I had zero. And then all of a sudden I was like, I was looking at like ESPN schedule. And then I kind of just like, all right, what? Oh, and then like I look at a team.
You work, look at whose schedule?
Yahoo's box score. Sorry. I as soon as I said it to you, I was like, oh, shoot. But I look at it. I look at the schedule and I kind of like, okay, what is this team spark any? Does my brain fire at all? And the team that where I was like, hey, my tail started wagging was the Steelers offense once again. Let's talk about them again. I'm like, why not? And this isn't so much the maybe Russell Wilson shot play element, which is just like they're completing them. It's their pass game is going to be, I feel like I've used this word 10 times on the spot, volatile, but it is. Mm-hmm. But that's what this pass game is kind of designed to be. It's a, hey, sometimes we boom, sometimes it isn't there. I think the Commanders game is the perfect iteration of what that could be. A couple pickings and Mike Williams, awesome touchdowns. Who cares about the other 15 throws? You get those two and we're all happy about it. But the run game and the health of the O-line is really starting to pick up. And that makes a lot of sense because now Zach Frazier, who, like, honestly, when he's been healthy, has been one of the best rookies at any position in the NFL. And he's the center for the Steelers. His mental side's incredible. Like he has advanced knowledge, and I could just tell because of how he communicates, and I could see it makes the quarterback's lives easier. Even when he wasn't in Fields, I could feel it was just kind of, he lost a little bit there. And now with Russ, you got Russ who started over 100 games in his career, and we got a rookie center dictating everything, and it's confident, it's quick, and how quick he operates mentally. It kind of, I mean, his physical side is fantastic too. It just lets everybody else feel the calm. Okay, we're going the 54 here with the point. Okay. If I'm, you know, the right tackle, Broderick Jones, who's very iffy. Oh, okay. All right. At least I know my eyes can go to the right guy to hit this guy. That just calms. It's a booster effect. Centers can have that, especially a guy like this. But then a right guard, Mason McCormick, who stepped in. He was a fourth round pick. He's really solidified the middle of the line. And he's just been a solid player already as a rookie. And they drafted another guy in the first round, Troy Fontenot, who I'm super high on, but he's had injury stuff. He's out for the year. They've been reshifting this line, but then they got Isaac Sumalo. He was hurt initially in the year, and now he's worked his way back. And now you can feel it. And now it just seems more guys are all going to the right spots. The double teams are really working it really nicely together. Najee Harris is running hard, sometimes misses some holes, and I'm still a little I can't just always be 100% complimentary to Najee. It's just always, he always leaves me wanting something a little more. But Jalen Warren's hitting those holes, and if he didn't have the fumble at the 1 yard line, which is kind of a fluky thing, like, I mean, that drive was a great drive, and it really would have like, that was an amazing Steelers drive, and like the run game really started cooking on that drive. They're a good second half team. Darnell Washington's been, we gave him a shout out yesterday on Football 301, is truly one of my favorite role players in the league. He's a true capital Y blocking tight end who can do some stuff after the catch underneath, you know, the mountain that rides. They just have figured this out, and it's not sexy. It's not a top 10 offense, but I think now it's creeping up to more that average with high highs because of the Mike Williams, George Pickens, Russell Wilson deep ball element. And honestly, AFC, it's you can fight in this. Their defense is good. Their special teams does some good stuff too. Like, this is a formula that, I'm not saying contender, but a formula that can win a playoff game. Not even just make the playoffs, but win a playoff game because they can get this. And it feels more real now. And maybe I start seeing the stats kind of creep up to that. But the eye test looks a lot better than maybe did even a couple of weeks ago.
No, I love this one. I have a sicko fascination with the Steelers offense for a lot of the same reasons that you just mentioned.
Steelers, don't you?
I don't know what it is, man. But I mean, especially with this offense and the volatility of the deep passing game, I totally agree. It's going to be up and down. But this looks like a week that it should be up against the Baltimore Ravens team that can't stop the deep pass. So love that. And I'm glad you brought up the Jalen Warren stuff, because I think he's kind of getting forgotten about because of the way the season started for him with the injuries and obviously the fumble at the 1 yard line. That sucks. But 42.9% rushing success rate, 14.3, which was way better than Najee Harris in that game against Commanders. And then you look at runs of 10 plus yards, 14.3% of his runs went for 10 plus yards, 4.8 for Najee Harris. Like, he is consistently the bigger play guy. And especially, you know, in the passing game, 14.3 targets per route run. And that, I think, is critical with Russ here, because Russ is just so, it's touchdown to check down for
That's
Russ.
It.
It was in Denver. It is here. It's just, this is much better designed. And if we can get Jalen Warren cooking on some of those check down plays and just little flat routes and stuff like that for him at the running back position, I think actually there could be a real deal, maybe a little PPR scammy type role for Jalen Warren going forward.
Oh no, that's a great call. And the check down stuff with Russ was, I mean, especially on, they faced so many third and longs in Denver, and he was just giving up on the plays and just checking down to the backs. And now it's been more of the, oh, I get scrambled, all right, I'm checking it down. So that's a great call with the PPR stuff. And Warren's just kind of running hard for him, you know, like he that's what he does. And another thing is he's one of the best pass protecting backs in the entire NFL. I know that doesn't show up in fantasy stats, but it'll show up on snap count. And if you're out on the field, because you can do that, then the ball will find you because you're just simply out on the field. So the fact that he is one, and Najee's not bad, but Warren is just like exceptional in that area. So as they develop that, trust that even more, he can maybe even get even some more of those kind of junky touches on third down.
All right, let's move to your next one here. Juwan Jennings, San Francisco 49ers wide receiver. You touched on it earlier. I've talked a lot about Jennings this week too. But what are you – I mean, look, we know you've got an affinity for this player. I do as well. But what are you seeing from him now in what was a new role for Jennings in Week 10?
That's it, the new role. I think it's more Juwan Jennings went from kind of a film watcher's folk hero, like, you know, the blocking, the third down conversions, just, you know, clean player. Now there's some fantasy viability to Juwan Jennings. And I think that's why I'm nerding out about it, that it's not just a theory thing. All right, you're going to step out at X and step out on the outside. He can do it, okay, but you still got to see it. Like, you still, are you able to function with those touches? Are you able to win against press? Are you going to win against coverage focused on you? I know the Bucs defense is a little patchy. Yeah,
totally.
But he did it. You know, I've seen this guy for several years now become, I mean, borderline unguardable from the slot on third down, like just on those quick little out routes that they run with him. Well, 5 to 7 yard routes. He is so big, so long, and is able to get in and out of routes. So now you're seeing, like, you know, even more growth and even more maturation from his route development and route tree development and route, you know, expanding that role. So I think this isn't going away. You know, I, of course, is hurt, and I know they're going to get Ricky Pearsall going, but with CMC back, Debo's role becomes more of the him and CMC work in conjunction with each other. And now Juwan Jennings is going to have more of the Ayuk stuff. So it's going to become some matchup dependencies, you know, zone coverage teams, man coverage teams, all that stuff. But I'm seeing Juwan Jennings win against that stuff. And again, I don't chart it as much as you do, but just saying anecdotally, he is winning in this stuff. Like, he is a viable fantasy receiver, I think, going forward. I just think this is very real. Not saying receiver one or anything, but like a flex guy, you know, or someone that you have on your roster that you get in there propping as a receiver two or something of that sort. Like, I think that is very real, as opposed to before when he was just, like I said, a film watcher's folk hero.
Oh, I think he could be like a wide receiver too rest of the season. I think he could be. I do want to see it against a team that's not Tampa Bay. I totally agree with you on that. Yeah, that's
don't get too ahead of my skis,
with all these receivers, with everything going on with San Francisco, I do want to see it against a team that's not Tampa Bay. Although Seattle, you know, they're coming out of their bye. Maybe Mike McDonald's got a different pitch coming out of there, but they're still not like one of the best defenses in the league or anything. They do some cool stuff. They got some nice ideas, but
yeah,
they can't stop cutting linebackers or churning through their linebacker position. So, like, we
don't need Jordan Brooks. Maybe actually we do.
by the way, not a good thing to say about a team when they're about to face Kyle Shanahan and San Francisco 49ers, who have probably done more to put linebackers in hell in the last like decade of the NFL than anyone else. So I'm curious definitely to see this matchup for sure, but I'm interested in playing out sort of the two thought experiments here with the 49ers receivers. One, just you mentioned, like, typically the way we think about this 49ers team from like a week-to-week fantasy perspective is, okay, Debo's going to tear up the zone teams. Ayuk's going to tear up the man teams because he's the X receiver and because he's one of the best man coverage beating wide receivers ever. In last season, really the season before that, he's just great against man coverage. Debo is not. That's always been the case with Debo. It's more than just like roles. It's actually just the player ability. And I do think that Jennings showed, like, this is the thing that clicks with Jennings, is that, yeah, he's great on third down. Man coverage rates go up on third down. We've seen there's a proof of concept here that we saw then really play out in the full role, as you mentioned, against Tampa Bay. I'm just looking at like the top teams that play, you know, man coverage now, and it's like nobody plays a ton of man coverage, but you know, we've got Seattle, Green Bay, Buffalo. Those are kind of a little more
single high heavy. You know,
Green Bay is definitely probably the one there that's more that's the most like man coverage of any of these teams.
Yeah. No, they don't play the Lions, do they?
They play the Lions in week 17, actually. Fantasy championship, baby.
Yeah, so actually, there he is. There's your prior. Yeah, I know the Bills are all cover two. Oh, man, that's a CMC game if I've ever seen it. Yeah, Bears. Bears are going to cover three, but they're quarters cover three team. Rams are a big two high team. Dolphins are a little bit everything.
Two high team.
Yeah. Yeah, so Lions.
So really, Lions week 17 fantasy championship. I mean, get ready.
It's this next week and the last week. Yeah, so it's the Jennings weeks. But hey, it's relevant for this week at the very least. Or no, sorry. Yeah, for 2 weeks from now. I'm sorry. That'll be relevant.
Yeah, for fantasy championships. How about that? That's a good nug right there. Okay. I also just wanted the second thought experiment I want to play out here is, what do you think this receiver core looks like next year?
I know.
I mean, I know. Yeah, I know the answer is I don't know. But like just and I know this is not we'll get to your last thing and actually maybe something that will help people out this week. But I'm just super curious about this, Nate, because they have Ayuk on a mega extension, but he might not be like a real deal factor until midway through next season. Right. real risk of that just with the multi-ligament knee injury that he suffered, and we might not even see real deal Brandon Ayuk again until like 2026. And hey folks, that hurts me as much as it hurts you to hear it, but that might be the reality of where he just is right now at this point. It might be a minute till we get that player again. The contract structure that they have on Debo is kind of like, you know, maybe it's they could fungible. Move on from him. They don't. But they extended Jennings. They drafted Ricky Pearsall in the first round. I think Pearsall looks pretty damn good right now, as well. So what do you think this receiver room looks like next year?
Yeah, I think Debo, in some way, shape, or form, is the odd man out just because of contract stuff. I mean, they're paying, you know, they paid defensive guys now. They just paid Demondador Lenore, their slot defender. So like they're investing. The Brock Purdy stuff is coming up, which is, you know, that also has to be answered, you know, contract, how much they're going to pay him. So somebody, I think, just from investment stuff has to be squeezed out. And to me, it's Debo, because I feel like they, you know, the Ayuk stuff from the summer that we talked about 500 million times, that felt like, kind of felt like in the end, it felt like that was just, you know, trade stuff, obviously, or not trade stuff, negotiation tactics, obviously. Yeah. Where the Debo stuff, just this contract, you know, you haven't always, as Ayuk's hurt right now, haven't always been able to rely on him for health, you know, those types of things. Like I could see, even though he's just such a specific player that's like best in this type of offense, just the contract squeezing and what they're investing in these teams. I mean, they need, there's some holes on this team that they're able to mitigate it better than most teams that would be, especially on offense, especially with their O-line and stuff. But man, like you're going to have that much invested in your receivers, a team that is, really, it's a Shanahan offense. And I know we just talked about how they are more pass heavy this year, and some of that's with Purdy and some of that is with these guys. But even when they hurt,
that's kind of what I was gonna throw to you, is that you said in this offense, maybe what we've thought of this offense, and again, people can have their opinions about what is the right way to do it. People can have opinions about what Kyle Shanahan should do with his offense, like GFL with that. Okay, good luck. But anyways, like maybe that our opinions of what this offense is going to change. Yeah. And then this is an offense now, if it is going to be more drop back, like let's put it in Purdy's hands and let him kind of point and shoot and get into creation mode and all that wild stuff. Maybe we need receivers that can really win. Right. Debo's never been a man coverage beating receiver. He's never been just like I win in isolation receiver. And also he's been in the league a minute and he's had a lot of injuries and things like that. I don't know. My whole point in this is that I do think Jennings, from like a dynasty perspective, is not going to just be a 2024 fluke player. Like, I'm not saying go trade your first round pick or something like that for Jawan Jennings, but this does happen with receivers sometimes. I mean, Cedric Tillman right now has gone from a guy that was on dynasty waiver wires to like, I don't know if I should trade a second round rookie pick for I don't know if I should trade Cedric Tillman for a second round rookie pick next year, because like this guy might be a starter. Man, I don't know if Jennings, because he's a little bit older, whatever, is going to be viewed in the dynasty space the same way. But from a player perspective and where this offense is trending, I don't know.
No, but not even just receiver room. So like Kyle Juszczyk is 33 this year, and there's a potential his contract goes through next year when he's 34. But still not even just building for next year, just after that. Like, are we going to rely a lot, have Kyle Juszczyk out there for 40-plus snaps? Are we going to just become more of an 11-personnel team? When you're becoming an 11-personnel team and Kyle Juszczyk is getting older, injuries might crop up. You know, like they're giving themselves like, we don't want to get away from this just because of an injury coming up, which obviously one of these guys gets hurt all the time, it seems like. So, you know, like maybe it's just a reconfiguration of what they want to get after. Like maybe Shanahan keeps looking at the Rams and McVay and going like, man, that seems fun. Man, that's cool. You have a quarterback just drop back and solve everything. Wow, that's a lot of fun. Rather, you know, maybe he thinks Purdy can get to a Diet Coke version of that. You know, like maybe again, these guys more than anyone, these guys being Kyle Shanahan, McVay, those two especially, evolve and reiterate their stuff quicker than anyone and faster than anyone. And they're, I think, have the best self-scouting of knowing what they can and can't get away with. So it's a great point. Like that, this is gonna be something, and now I'm going to marinate on for a while, because I think the math points to Debo being the odd man out, but they might just go, no, we want all of them next year. Yeah. And then we'll figure it out the year after that when Juszczyk and all that stuff get older and all that. So I know it might be just a total philosophical change. It might be just like, hey, we need depth as well, not just depth, but talented depth. Like all these types of things. Like, but it's going to be curious how they navigate all this, especially with the Purdy situation coming up.
All right, let's get to your third and final thing that you are nerding out about, which I mean, this is definitely this is a good one.
Yeah, I don't know what the fancy relevance of this one is, but it's more just like I need a space to talk about it. It's the Bengals personnel funkiness. This is their use of tight ends, which makes sense with the T. Higgins injury and the sabbatical of Jermaine Burton. Or the journey of Burton.
he got back out there. He's off his 1 week punishment or whatever. It was.
I laughed so hard that his first target, I think it was, or first catch on the Thursday night game was they made his ass run over the middle. They said, yeah, you're not getting the clean outside catch. You're going to take on the safety on this one. Get in the rook. And he did. And he got it. It was good. Good route and everything. But looking at the Bengals, and it just kind of really piqued my interest, and I know Herb Street didn't think it was interesting, but I did, was they were getting into like 0-3 personnel, which is 0 running backs, 3 tight ends, 2 receivers, and 0-2 personnel, which is 0 running backs, 2 tight ends, and 3 receivers. Like a decent amount. They did 7 times against the Ravens. They were in 12 personnel 30 times, which is 2 tight ends, 1 running back, 2 receivers, 30 times against the Ravens. The week before, they were in 12 personnel 30 times against the Raiders. And they used that 0-2 or 0-3 personnel 5 times. Kind of mixed result for the 0-2, 0-3 stuff. I just think it's interesting. They're the only team doing that. Some of this is just who they have. Get their best players out there. Everyone knows we're passing it in these situations. They were using some fun protection stuff with them. 2 tight ends in the backfield. And then Mike Gesicki is the de facto slot guy. This is a way to have Gesicki in his best role. You don't want him blocking anybody ever because he's the worst blocker in the NFL. But you do, I mean that, but you do, like, he can win a slot battle, especially if the defense is focused on Jamar Chase. Like, he can maybe get a safety that doesn't have his size. He can maybe beat zone coverage and just find and be a big target for Joe Burrow to find. Like, those little things, I think that's just a way for them to streamline their personnel with Higgins out and figure it all out. So it's more just a quirk that I'm just looking at with them. But they really have started leaning into this, like even against the Eagles the week before that, they had 22 plays out 12 personnel. So like even with Higgins back in there, I don't think this is totally going away because it's been successful for them, but it's just the Bengals offense every year is kind of cool how they shift midseason and how they change everything. And that's why I never get the Zach Taylor, like people get mad at him. Most of this offense is run because I know most of this, we talked about this, most of this offense is run because this is what Joe Burrow likes. Like these are the plays that the quarterback likes. They just try to figure out the personnel to get it all streamlined and work really well. And they keep doing this every year in, year out. They didn't just go, oh, our receivers are a bunch of hurt. All right, well, we are an 11 personnel team. So let's get, you know, we need a receiver out there. They said, well, no, our best personnel is our tight end. So let's figure out a way to get them on the field. I just like that. And I just want to kind of give them props about like, they're always trying. They're always tweaking. They're always trying to find things. They got quarterback operating at a high level. So it's a good way to do it. So, yeah, no fantasy implications here. I don't know if Tanner Hudson's going to drop another, you know, 14-point banger for you, you know, but, you know, I do think their tight ends.
I think the fantasy implication, Nate, there is actually with the tight end stuff is that I could not tell you how many fantasy analysts were like touting Mike Gesicki last week. And I I started Mike Gesicki in my leagues. I'm not dunking on people that said this or anything, because we talk about it on the show is like when Mike Gesicki becomes a slot receiver, right? When they don't have Jermaine Burton out there. Well, they did have Jermaine Burton in this game, yeah. So that was one part of it. Is like, okay, then Jermaine Burton was outside on 94.3% of his snaps. He's only a guy they're going to use on the outside right now. That allowed them to bump Yoshivas back into the slot for 40.3%. Jamar Chase is up to like 26%, a little bit higher than he was in the previous week. So like getting that wide receiver back out there kind of lessened the need for Gesicki to be a target earner as the slot guy. He was targeted, was Mike Gesicki, on about 20% of his routes. Tanner Hudson was 35% of his routes. So again, it's like, yeah, everybody's on Mike Gesicki. Hudson, because they go to these more heavy tight end sets, ends up getting 6 catches, 42 yards, and a touchdown. So, and there's no way, like, look, I'm not dunking on people that were touting Gesicki. I started Gesicki, but it's just in this sort of game, when the personnel changes, this is where it can have a fantasy impact.
Yeah, I think the safest bet is just Jamar Chase, but it's just all the auxiliary roles, and this is it. Like Gesicki, you're not going to build a passing game around Gesicki. You just want it to be viable. Like that's the thing, is that it's a guy that sits in the corner in basketball and shoots 2 threes a game. You don't want them wasted, those 2 or 3 threes. They're like, oh well, they don't even have to guard him. You have to at least have the defense actually has to acknowledge that Gesicki's on the field. If you don't, he can take advantage of you. The offense can take advantage of you. That's all this is. And what you're bringing up with Ivo, God, Greek Freak, Ivos, and Chase and everything, it unlocks them. And again, you're not becoming like, this guy has to line up here. We were talking about that earlier, where that becomes a fragile offense, where this guy, Keenan Allen, has to line up in the slot, you know, for the Bears. And this guy has to line up out here. Like, because of that, you get some of that formation versatility, just opens things up, just makes it all easier, just so much easier. And you see Jamar Chase going for 2 bills and how many times did he hit the over longest reception? 5 times?
I mean, I don't want to talk about it.
It's unbelievable.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do when Higgins is back out there. As of today, it sounds like he's going through walkthroughs, but might not fully practice today on Wednesday. So it'll be interesting to see leading into this game. Because, yeah, I mean, even Chase Brown, 20.4% of the targets. I talked about this yesterday with Sal. Like, he was their check down answer. Like, all right, well, I'm not messing around here. Let me just get it to Chase Brown. And he was effective in that role. So all these guys could be interesting in terms of what they're going to do going forward with this personnel group. But you mentioned the Jamar Chase longest reception props. Let's take a break and let's try to hit another good week of props here with our Thursday night preview right after this. All right, Nate, we are back. We have another electric division Thursday night football game to preview here. We got Commanders at Eagles, 48.5 over under. Eagles are 3.5 point favorites, according to BetMGM. What do we like? Let's start Commander's side. What do we like in this game?
Oh, Commander's side. Man, well, I do like how their offensive attack is right now. I was actually just looking at one last little stat for this team. For the Commander's side, God, you said, what do I like? I actually like more like passing attempt overs for Jaden Daniels. So it's at 30.5 right now. So I'm saying that, you know, he hits pass. Yeah, it's a little beefier than I was expecting. I thought it was gonna be more on that 28.5, 27.5 number. But I think that this going against a Fangio defense runs a lot of zone. I don't think there's gonna be a ton of those outside hitters that this offense is able to get because of the too high structure. So you got to think it's going to be extremely nickel and dime heavy, this Commander's offense. I think it's going to be a lot of running because that's what you want to do against a Fangio defense. And also it's just underneath throws and daring them to tackle. So I'm looking at stuff that's more frequency based for the Commander's passing game as maybe as opposed to yardage totals. So if you're looking at maybe like, you know, even like a Terry McLaurin over 4.5 receptions is interesting to me. As opposed to maybe anything with yardage totals. And then run game wise, I did not see the Brian Robinson.
We don't know. As of the time we're taping this here on Wednesday afternoon, we don't know if he's going to play or obviously.
So that kind of takes away though that run game props I can find. I don't know if Jaden Daniels is going to get the scrambling opportunities either. When you face a zone heavy team too, they're going to have eyeballs on the quarterback. They're going to have eyeballs back there. They're pretty disciplined about the QB run game as well. As far as their edge players, those guys don't get too out of whack with the stuff. So maybe you're looking at some under for rushing yards for him as well, for Jaden Daniels. Don't think.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do we think about a Jaden Daniels? Yeah, 45 and a half under. I don't know. I could see that.
I could see that as well. Because it's just this how this defensive attack is going to be. They're fine with you getting rid of the ball. It's what they want you to do. It's like, yeah, get those 4 yard gains, go for it. So that's why I can just picture it where he doesn't have to go, I'm pressured, okay, now I got to scramble, which is when you see Jaden scrambles, when he feels the pressure or feels blitz or anything like that. I think this is more of a calm nickel and dime performance from him.
I mean, this team, Eagles defense plays more cover six than anybody in the NFL. Yep. Like, they want to just really keep these windows closed downfield. And this is, that's what makes this such an interesting schematic matchup, because Washington wants to attack downfield. Last week against Pittsburgh was the perfect matchup because they play so much single high. So, I talked about it all freaking week that they were going to hit big plays to Terry McLaurin in that game. And that's exactly what happened. In this one, I'm not sure how they're going to attack Philadelphia. So I do kind of like the Jaden Daniels under rushing yards. I think we put that on our board, our official on board.
Yeah. This is the brainstorm. The words are the brainstorming. Yeah, and then we're doing a nice
sesh.
Yes.
Official board, though, Jaden Daniels under 45 and a half rushing yards.
And then put preliminary overpass attempts. Just put it off to the side, I guess, for now.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yes.
Kind of like it makes sense. They correlate together.
Yeah, they do. 19 and a half completions. Okay. I'll go over that, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I like that better. Over 19 and a half completions for Jaden Daniels. That would be the other one I would go for on this side of the ball. I wish I had a better rushing stat for the running backs, but there's nothing really juicy out there to kind of look at.
All right. So official Rex on Washington side, 19 and a half. Completions for Jaden Daniels over under 45 and a half rushing yards for Jaden Daniels in this one. Love a good under. You can sweat it the entire game, or it's over in 2 seconds.
One long 70 yard rod, and that's it. Yeah, I can see those receiver screens though.
Yeah, exactly. So we could see some Luke McCaffrey receiver screens in this one. We'll see. I'm interested in the McCaffrey stuff. I would like to see them actually involve him a little more. As skeptical as I was about him as a prospect, I actually kind of would like to see a little more Luke McCaffrey, and maybe a little like Noah Brown's fine, but come on. All right. I will say, from a fantasy perspective in this game, this is really a straightforward one. Like, you're pretty much starting the guys you always start. If you have a loaded roster, maybe McLaurin isn't going to pop quite as much, but he's a wide receiver one this season. You're not benching Terry McLaurin unless you're absolutely loaded. I just think, for the most part, anybody you're playing. And from a running back perspective, if Robinson is starting, you play him, but if he doesn't, you just play Austin Eckler, because I think he's stepped into that role. Even if he's not going to have, you know, the same volume, he's not going to take over 100% of the rush attempts or anything like that. They're always going to spell him a little. That makes sense. So let's flip it to the Eagles side, though, from a prop standpoint. Again, another team that's just like, you're starting the dudes here in this game. I don't know if this is going to turn into a shootout or anything, because both these defenses have, I mean, they're two great offenses, but both defenses have tightened up, especially on Philadelphia's side.
Yeah.
But from an offensive standpoint, where do we want to go in this one?
Oh, I look at Saquon Barkley's numbers to start every time. But but his 93 and a half and that Derrick Henry last week has scared me off of those high numbers and everything.
I know.
So that's where I'm a little hesitant on this. I think, you know, Washington's defense is very, I mean, shoot, just watch the touchdowns that Mike Williams and George Pickens hit. Just anyone can hit on this. They're susceptible to big plays, stuff down the field. So I don't know if I'm going back to the longest reception well, but I am looking at, I may be going, not even just AJ Brown, I'm going Devontae Smith over receiving yards. He's at 52 and a half right now. And I might trickle on that over a little bit, where short week, game planning, Commanders defense is limited. They have played better, especially up front, but they're still susceptible to deep ball. Well, I'm going to take away AJ Brown. All right, we're going to have two guys on his side. We're going to put whoever we think is our best corner, Mike Sainstro, whatever it is, have more focus on him. Devontae Smith, this seems like a game that he can take advantage of. Corner two or focus number two. And I think this is the type of week to do that. Like, you know, just this is, it's not a great defense, but if they use their resources on one aspect of the offense, I think Devonta Smith is going to be the beneficiary of that. So that's the first one that pops to me. You know, run game wise, it'd be like, it's more rush attempts for Barkley than yards, you know, but the rush attempts is still at 18.5. You know, that's just a little too high for me to like truly, truly like as far as for that, because 93.5 rushing yards, I can maybe see that, but I feel like it's going to be a balanced attack from the Eagles, like, because they can have their way with either. So I don't know if it's going to be one of those 40 plus rush game scripts for these guys. So I'm kind of looking at those, you know, the Barkley rush attempt overs, but not all the way there. Not putting it on the board yet.
What do you think about, I mean, Jalen Hurts over 10.5 rush attempts is +100, plus odds there. And I mean, Washington does play a good bit of man coverage, or eighth in man coverage rate. Obviously, that's a Dan Quinn thing. I don't know. If we're trying to get something out of the run game, it's just tough to bet the Barkley stuff because it is, all the numbers are so big.
So high.
And I'm not trying to do an under Saquon Barkley bet and absolutely hate myself come Friday morning. So
when he goes
I don't know.
He's like, Barkley's
that's not worth
stay
it.
Away. That's God, a, the Commanders that's, are actually good against scrambles, believe it or not. They're second in the NFL against scrambles as far as EPA. Maybe I'll look a little. Yeah. I don't hate that though. Like, the Eagles offense has gotten away from like read element plays, but they still use Hurts as a runner. What's his longest rush?
I mean, it's 12.5, but it is +100.
Okay.
We get one long run on Jalen Hurts.
I'm dial me up.
Let's
for that
do
one.
It. Let's do it. The board. Yeah. Okay. So Jalen Hurts over 12.5 longest rush at +100. So we're plus odds on this. We got to do finally a plus odds one. I do want to settle the receiver thing here between Brown and Devonta Smith, because my initial instinct was that this would be a big AJ Brown game, because again, the man coverage stats for Washington, but they're pretty middle. They're pretty like middle of the league in terms of single high versus too high. Probably lean a little bit more towards too high because that's kind of the way Dan Quinn again does things. But I did look it up. This is a great, just two bros looking up database stuff as we're podcasting. Great stuff. We're definitely getting raises for this one. Washington is 12th in terms of yards allowed to slot receivers so far this year, and man coverage slot stuff does suit Devonta Smith. So I actually kind of like the Devonta Smith over 52.5 receiving yards, and I like it paired with the longest rush for Jalen Hurts. That like game script wise makes sense to me.
Right, and then AJ Brown's going to go for 140, and
totally.
This is how it goes. But that two eye stuff too is that like that, in theory, takes away the number one option. So like that is again why the other side of the ball, why it's like it's a scary Terry week, you know, not you know, it's a scary Terry McLaurin week as opposed to scary Terry McLaurin because of just that cover six naturally takes away from the number one receiver, especially if they line up on the outside a lot like that. It's just naturally going to do that. Maybe not catches, but yards wise, it should have a natural barrier to that. And shoot, this Eagles defense, I'm writing about them. I'm actually writing about this game right now. This Eagles defense is real. I've talked about it a little bit, but it's very real. Their young players are very good. Cooper DeJean is good. Quinion Mitchell is good. So like they have some real talent along with just the scheme, like letting them play well as well. So like that's a very real thing.
All right. So our four props in this game, official: Jaden Daniels over 19.5 completions, Jaden Daniels under 45.5 rushing yards, Devonta Smith over 52.5 rush yards, and at plus odds, Jalen Hurts over 12.5 longest rush. I like this. I think this all makes sense to me.
I like this.
I feel a little bit less conviction with this game than I did some of the other most recent Thursday night games.
Last week, I felt like you couldn't stop us. We had so many we liked. I felt like we had eight by the when it was all said and done.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this one. You said you're writing about this game, Nate. What else do you got working up for people?
Oh, this right now in Football 301, that you can hear us yesterday with our little kind of superlative special. And then tomorrow we'll be previewing Week 11. And then I have Dane Brugler on from The Athletic to have a big board off, which will be fun. But that,
well, sick. I can't wait to hear that as somebody that knows nothing about the college prospects right now. I'm definitely going to be checking that episode out. As for us, Like I said, that's going to do it for this show. Hell of a show. I mean, just packed with so many different teams that we talked through in this one, and hopefully some good props along the way. We will be back tomorrow on Friday. As usual, Andy Behrens and Tara Roberts join me to preview the weekly slate of games. Week 11 is here. It's happening. What a time to be alive. Until then, we are out.